What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Our headlines: several Palestinian groups hail Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei for his unwavering support for the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation. Iran rocks the U.S. for approving the sale of precision missiles to Israel to, quote, kill more Palestinian children with more precision. Also, Israel keeps pounding different parts of the Gaza Strip as 212 Palestinians have been killed in the territory since last week. Thank you for joining us. Beginning with our top story, Palestinian resistance groups hail the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution for his unwavering support for the Palestinian resistance against the Israeli occupation. In separate letters, the resistance movements praised Iran as the axis of unity among Muslim nations. The five groups include the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Fatah al-Intifada Movement, the Palestinian Popular Struggle Front, and the Alliance of Palestinian Forces. On Friday, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the Israeli regime is declining and is on the verge of collapse. Ayatollah Khamenei also called on Palestinians to continue fighting the Israeli regime through resistance. The leader made the remarks on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, which is marked as International Quds Day. Human rights activist Firas al-Najim says Zionist plots to foment Sunni-Shia divisions have failed miserably, and all Palestinian factions acknowledge that Iran is the real ally.
This is a evil tactic and strategy by the Zionists and the media, is to always continue to try to bring in a sectarian problem and make divisions between the Sunnis and Shias. And now we see today it has failed miserably. And the Palestinian resistance is acknowledging now all the different factions. You know, it was mostly, let's just say, Hamas and Islamic Jihad, but now every Palestinian we can see that has wisdom and that has a good insight is noticing that the real ally and the base of strength for the Palestinians is from Iran. Iran is doing this because they care about humanity. They care about human rights. They care about the liberation and the freedom of the Palestinians.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has criticized his U.S. counterpart, saying Joe Biden has bloody hands because of his support for Israelis' deadly military campaign against Palestinians.
Unfortunately, you're writing history with your bloody hands in this incident that is a serious disproportionate attack on Gaza, which is leading to the martyrdom of hundreds of thousands of people.
In a televised address, Erdogan also lashed out at Biden for his approval of new weapons sales to the Israeli regime. The comments represented one of Erdogan's strongest attacks on Biden ever. Washington has justified the Israeli military campaign as self-defense, blaming the resistance movement Hamas for the situation. On Monday, a report surfaced that the U.S. has also approved the sale of over $735 million worth of precision-guided weapons to Israel. Separately, Jordan's king said the international community must shoulder its responsibility and move to stop Israeli crimes. In a call with the UN chief, King Abdullah said the ongoing escalation is a result of repeated provocative actions by Israel. Iran's foreign minister slams the United States for arming Israel while the regime continues its war campaign of killing Palestinian children and women. Mohammad Javad Zarif rapped Washington for a new delivery of precision missiles to Israel, stressing that the U.S. made munitions have rained down on innocent Palestinians since last week. Zarif also condemned the U.S. for obstructing, quote, the mildest possible U.N. Security Council statement against Israel. The United States has blocked for the third time in a week the adoption of a joint UN Security Council statement calling for a halt to, quote, Israeli-Palestinian violence and the protection of civilians. The Security Council will hold a new emergency closed-door meeting on Israeli war against Gaza on Tuesday. Israel has pounded Gaza with a new round of strikes as the regime's deadly onslaught on the besieged Palestinian territory enters its second week. Over 10,000 residential buildings have been damaged, and 212 Gazans have been killed, 61 of them children and 36 women, since last Monday. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in Gaza, Ashraf Shannon, who gave us an update on the Israeli aggressions. Let's take a listen.
Less than 5 minutes ago, Israeli fighter jets, I believe F-35 fighter jets, fired at least 10 rockets not far from where we're standing right now. We are in front of the emergency room of Al-Shifa Hospital. This is the main hospital, the main health provider for the entire Gaza Strip. And over the past few days, several explosions happened here. Earlier in the morning, a building not far from here, about a couple hundred yards, was bombed and completely destroyed. And many buildings there were also sustained either complete or partial damage. The airstrikes continue, not only in Gaza. The ones that we hear, the bombings that we count, is what we have in Gaza City. The Israeli fighter jets, the Israeli tanks, are hitting almost every town in the Gaza Strip as we speak, including Khan Yunis, Bethlehem in the north, Beth Hanun in the north, Barij, Nusayrat, Rafah. Every town and village in Gaza is under Israeli attack. Almost every minute, every hour, there is a bombing somewhere, there is a tank shelling somewhere. And if it's not tanks, they're using the Navy to fire its shells towards the coast of the Gaza Strip. Since yesterday, maybe at least 100 shells were fired at the coastline. Even earlier tonight, about an hour and a half, an hour ago, I was counting maybe 50 shells hitting the coast, not far from here. Shifa Hospital is adjacent to Al-Shati refugee camp. Shati is the...
That was a big explosion.
Shati is a... Yes. Shati is the Arabic word for beach, the beach refugee camp. It's not far from here, but 300 yards behind me is the Shati refugee camp. And even 2 days ago, when the Israeli regime bombed the building and
Palestinians in the West Bank have staged rallies to condemn Israelis' deadly aggression against the Gaza Strip. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Monat Yandil, earlier joined us to tell us more about the growing anger in the occupied territories.
Today, in the evening, Palestinians had been clashing with Israeli forces in Al-Arum refugee camp to the north of Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron. Our sources revealed to us that Palestinian youths threw stones at the Israeli military checkpoint there, or a tower for Israeli soldiers at the entrance to the refugee camp of Al-Arum. Israeli forces there opened fire at Palestinian youths and shot dead Ubaida Jawabri, 18-year-old, from the refugee camp of Al-Arum. Tomorrow, Tuesday, Palestinians have declared a general strike across the occupied territories. First, it was called by the High Follow-up Committee for the Arabs, Palestinians living in the lands in occupied 1948. Everything would be closed and shut down in these areas where shops, schools, everything would be completely closed. Today, in the occupied West Bank, the similar measures had been adopted. A general strike has been called also here in the occupied West Bank. It would be for the first time Palestinians living in the lands occupied by Israel in 1948, where the Israeli regime called it Israel. And here in the occupied West Bank, everything would be halted.
Palestinian resistance groups have launched fresh rocket attacks on Israel, causing air raid sirens wailing across the occupied lands, especially across the Gaza border. Hamas's military wing said it has targeted the Israeli city of Sderot. The Fasam brigades also hit a gathering of Israeli soldiers near the city. Hamas has threatened to hit Tel Aviv again if the regime does not stop its airstrikes on Gaza. Palestinian resistance groups also targeted other Israeli cities, including Ashkelon, Beersheba, as well as a number of military bases. An Israeli battleship was hit by Palestinian rockets off the coast of the Gaza Strip. So far, at least 10 Israelis have been killed and hundreds injured by Palestinian rocket fire. Israel has fired artillery shells into the Lebanese territory. The regime says it was responding to several rockets launched from Lebanon. Our correspondent, Mariam Saleh, gave us more details about the incident.
The latest we have is from the UNIFIL forces, the United Nations Interim Forces in Lebanon, and they said that they were able to monitor and find out that there were around four rockets that were fired from an area, the Kfar Shuba Hills area from Lebanon. They were fired towards occupied Palestine. However, three of them landed inside Lebanese territory. Of course, there were no casualties, but we were certain that three of them fell inside Lebanese territory, and one of them is still unknown exactly where it landed. We know from the Israeli sources that they did notice that there were some rockets fired towards occupied Palestine as well. Perhaps one of them was able to reach inside. This is why we had sirens sounding within the northern Galilee area. And they had settlers removed from their homes and so on, taken to safe areas. So there was some sort of an incident on the border. After that, we had several artillery fire from the Israelis, around 15 artillery shells fired into Kfar Shuba Hills area. Now, usually that area is not a residential area, so basically they're just responding in the same method that the rockets have been fired. Of course, we cannot say that the rockets were fired by a resistance group or perhaps definitely not Hezbollah, because if it were Hezbollah, then things would have been different. Perhaps it could be some Palestinian faction or Palestinian individuals.
Yemenis have taken to the streets of capital Sana'a to condemn the Israeli crimes against Palestinians. They also blame the U.S. complicit in exerting pressure on civilians in the occupied territories. Abdul Latif al-Washali leads us up from Sana'a.
Thousands of Yemenis headed to the streets of Yemen's capital Sana'a to express solidarity with the Palestinians on the Gaza Strip facing the Israeli relentless lethal bombing campaigns.
The Yemeni people have shown that the issue of Palestine is their red line. They have always voiced their support for the Palestinian cause. The Yemenis believe that Palestine is a sacred land and the occupation must come to an end at any cost. Yemenis crave for jihad in Palestine, even though Yemen is subjected to a brutal war for 7 years now.
Protesters blame the U.S. as complicit in the Israeli war crimes against the women and the children of the besieged Gaza Strip. They urge the Palestinian resistance groups to carry out further retaliatory rocket attacks against Israel.
Yemen's stance has been renewed along with the growing strength of Palestinian resistance in Gaza. The massive march confirms that the Yemenis stand by our side against the Israeli occupation. We salute the Yemeni people for their steadfast support despite being involved in a deadly war and siege for years.
Yemenis have also lambasted countries, some Arab states, for normalizing their relations with Israel. They said it is a great betrayal to all Muslims around the world.
It is clear that the normalization of relations with Israel is aimed at obtaining the praise of America and Israel. But the aggression happening today against the people of Gaza reveals the extent of their betrayal of the Palestinian cause and all Muslims.
Israel has renewed its attacks on the Gaza Strip and the West Bank in what has become the heaviest war against Palestinians over the past 7 years.
Holding up Palestinian flags, people here voice their solidarity with the Palestinian cause. They say the international community should hold Israel accountable for its war crimes and continued violation of the international law. Iyad Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The head of the World Health Organization has urged wealthy countries to share more of their vaccines with others, warning that the world has reached a situation of, quote, vaccine apartheid.
Even now, some high-income countries are moving to vaccinate children and adolescents, while health workers, older people, and other at-risk groups around the world remain unvaccinated. The consequences are clear to see. Cases and deaths from COVID-19 globally remain at or near record highs, and new variants threaten to unravel the gains we have made. The big problem is a lack of sharing, so the solution is more sharing.
Tedros Ghebreyesus underlined the rich countries, who account for just 15% of the global population, have 45% of the COVID-19 vaccines. In contrast, it said, lower and middle-income countries have received just 17% of the vaccines. He said a combination of vaccine nationalism, vaccine diplomacy, and severe supply constraints are hurting the UN-backed COVAX vaccine sharing mechanism. Earlier, he called on vaccine manufacturers to make doses available to the COVAX. The coronavirus pandemic so far infected over 163 million people and killed nearly 3.4 million more worldwide. Those are for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
A third of global food production will be at risk by the end of the century if greenhouse gas emissions continue to rise at their current rate, new research has suggested. Many of the world's most important food-growing areas will see temperatures increase and rainfall patterns alter drastically if temperatures rise by about 3.7 degrees Celsius. The forecast increase if greenhouse gas emissions stay high. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian's environment correspondent, Fiona Harvey. The piece is titled, Third of Global Food Production at Risk from Climate Crisis. Stay with us for more of Fiona Harvey's article. Of global food production will be at risk by the end of the century if greenhouse gas emissions continue to rise at their current rate, new research has suggested. Many of the world's most important food-growing areas will see temperatures increase and rainfall patterns alter drastically if temperatures rise by about 3.7 degrees Celsius. The forecast increase if greenhouse gas emissions stay high. Researchers at Aalto University in Finland have calculated that about 95% of current crop production takes place in areas they define as safe climatic space, or conditions where temperature, rainfall, and aridity fall within certain bounds. If temperature were to rise by 3.7 degrees Celsius or thereabouts by December, country's end, that safe area would shrink drastically, mostly affecting South and Southeastern Asia and Africa's Sudano-Sahelian zone, according to a paper published in the journal One Earth on Friday. However, if greenhouse gas emissions are reduced and the world meets the goals of the Paris Agreement in limiting temperature rises to 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees C above pre-industrial levels, then only about 5% to 8% of the global food production would be at risk. Matti Kummu, an associate professor of global food and water at Aalto University in Finland and the lead author of the paper, says, "A third of global food production will be at risk. We should be worried, as the climate safe space is quite narrow. But there are measures we can take in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, and we should empower people and societies in the danger zones to reduce the impact and increase their resilience and adaptive capacity. Although rising temperatures could increase food production in some areas that are currently less productive, such as the Nordic regions, that would not be anywhere near enough to offset the loss of important food-producing regions in the south," said Kummu. "There will be winners as well as losers, but the wins will be outweighed by the losses, and there is just not enough space for food production to move. We are already at the limits," he said. "Livestock farming would be affected as well as the risk to crop production," he said, "and many areas were likely to suffer large increases in water scarcity." The researchers examined the impact of climate changes on 27 of the most important food crops and 7 types of livestock. This century, in a high emission scenario, there could be as much as 1.5 million square miles or 4 million square kilometers of new desert around the world, the researchers found. Under 1.5 degrees Celsius to 2 degrees Celsius of warming, the boreal forests of Northern America, Russia, and Europe would shrink from their current 7 million square miles to about 6 million square miles by 2100. In a high-emission scenario, only 3 million square miles would remain, according to the researchers. The paper adds to previous research that has found that global heating is already having an impact on agricultural productivity. Earlier research has shown that the climate crisis is already eating into the output of the world's agricultural systems, with productivity much lower than it would have been if humans hadn't rapidly heated the planet, new researchers found. Advances in technology, fertilizer use, and global trade have allowed food production to keep pace with a booming global population since the 1960s, albeit with gross inequities that still leave millions of people suffering from malnutrition. But rising temperatures in this time have acted as a handbrake to farming productivity of crops and livestock, according to the new research published in Nature Climate Change. Productivity has actually slumped by 21% since 1961, compared to if the world hadn't been subjected to human-induced heating. With the global population set to rise to more than 9 billion by 2050, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, has estimated that food production will have to increase by about 70%, with annual crop production increasing by almost 1 billion tons and meat production soaring by more than 200 million tons a year by this point. Meanwhile, global temperatures are rising at a rate that scientists warn is extremely dangerous for human civilization. "The impact already is larger than I thought it would be," said Ariel Ortiz-Bobia, an economist at Cornell University who led the research. Ariel Ortiz-Bobia says, It was a big surprise to me. The worry I have is that research and development in agriculture takes decades to translate into higher productivity. The projected temperature increase is so fast, I don't know if we're going to keep pace with that. The research measured productivity by inputs, such as labor, fertilizer, and equipment, and the output in food they produce, using a model to determine how climate change has influenced this relationship. While farming has generally become far more efficient in recent decades, it is increasingly menaced by heat waves that exhaust farm workers and wither certain crops. Extreme weather events and drought can also affect the output of a farm, particularly smaller farm operations in poorer countries. In 2019, scientists who analyzed the top 10 global crops that provide the majority of our food calories found that climate change is reducing the worldwide production of staple crops such as rice and wheat. Again, less affluent countries are suffering worse from this situation.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone. In these days when the tombs of saints and even prophets are being desecrated and destroyed by terrorists posing as Muslim, such as the blowing up of the holy mausoleum of Prophet Jonah in the Iraqi city of Mosul some years ago by the US-supported Takfiri terrorists, let us ponder on what the Messenger of Mercy said to his cousin, son-in-law and heir, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, in reply to his query, "What shall be the reward of the one will visit our graves, beautify them and maintain them?" "Your grave and that of your sons are among the edifices of paradise and among its fields."
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the sermons and letters and sayings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. We are discussing about the qualities of the pious people based on the sermon number 184 of Nahjul Balagha, famously known as the Sermon of the Pious. According to other versions of collections of the sermons of Imam Ali alayhi salam, they have numbered this particular sermon to be 191 or 192, depending on the collector of this book. We reached this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam brings about a very important quality of those who are pious and says that a pious person is one who لا يدخل في الباطل ولا يخرج من الحق. A pious person is one who doesn't enter into evil or does not enter into something that is wasteful or something that is false, al-batil. وَلَا يَخْرُجُ مِنَ الْحَقِّ, and does not exit the truth, does not come out of the state of truth. And this is a very important quality. In fact, we are going to discuss here shortly as to what it means that a person remains to be in the path of truth.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, Imam Ali alayhi salam, in this phrase of the sermon, says that one who is pious is one who does not exit the truth. It's as if he is always within the truth. He is always inside the truth. Now, when we say inside the truth, of course it is somewhat metaphorical, in the sense that you have to imagine that the truth is like a compartment, or you can say an area in which a person enters. It like covers that person. That means everything that surrounds him, everything, the way he reacts in different situations is always the truth. لا يخرج من الحق. Now, that actually means that a pious person sets some purpose, sets some goals in life, and also has some principles in life, and also has certain actions that he performs, always maintain that state of truth around him. For some people, when they come across the universe, the way they look at the universe, the way they interact with the universe, is based on whims and without firm principles and without firm understanding. So sometimes you will notice people interpret what happens around the universe in a wrong manner. They do not have the insight to be able to see the divine actions of God. And that means that they have already exited the truth, because they have entered into a realm of whims. As soon as a person lacks that understanding, the true understanding about the universe, and does not have the right outlook towards the events that are occurring around him, and number three, doesn't react in the right manner, that is the time that he exits the truth. I will give you an example. When a person, for example, comes across an area where people are committing sins, right? This particular situation that has come about, even when there are people who are sinful and committing sins around him, and unfortunately he's in a position where he can't leave that place, the moment he has the right reaction and has the right outlook towards this phenomenon, he's inside the truth. So for example, he knows that all of these entities that are around him are a test for him now. They are things that Allah, with his permission, has allowed this to happen and has allowed me to be inside this situation. And because of this whole situation, Allah is testing me how I will react. Once he has this outlook, he's inside the truth. But this outlook is not enough. After that, he needs to make the right reaction. So if in this situation he controls himself and rather stops himself from committing those sins, and even then, above that, begins to guide people towards the right path and to stop them from committing wrong, at that moment, he will be within truth. But the moment he gets the wrong outlook, that means when he sees the people around him committing these sins and these crimes, and he ignores it or says that that is their life and that is I, so then I have my life. This itself is a wrong outlook. Now, unfortunately, he has exited the truth and he has entered the realm of falsehood. And of course, when he after that commits evil crimes and mistakes and follows the path of falsehood, he has entered into the state of falsehood.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
So what is important for a pious person is the right outlook, the right ways to react. And the right ways to react are always following the commandments of God, the Sharia. Because the commandments of God, when you realize that, ذَلِكَ بِأَنَّ اللَّهَ هُوَ الْحَقِّ, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the absolute truth, the truth that exists in the universe, that entity upon which everyone depends, everything depends. He gives meaning and value to everything. At that moment, if a person were to adhere to the teachings that are coming from such a God, to the commandments of such a God, of such an entity, they are in the truth. The moment they separate themselves, the moment they disobey, that means they are separating themselves from the truth. They are exiting from that environment of truth, and they are now entering an environment, a whimsical environment that they are creating themselves. They are performing actions, they are not real, they are against his human dimension and are therefore taking him lower and further away from reality. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that he gives us the opportunity to follow the truth and to stick to it and to always remain in that path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
French musician has come up with an innovative idea to end his pandemic hiatus, performing on top of a mountain in Swiss Alps. Tiho performed on a platform at an altitude of 3,000 meters. The 30-year-old artist braved sub-zero temperatures in April to perform. He also had to overcome his fear of heights. Tiho has not performed in public for more than a year due to COVID-19 restrictions. He says the lockdown offers him a good chance to become more creative.
I feel like I had a lot of creativity during this period because I was stuck in the studio and a lot of time to make music. So usually when I perform gigs and I don't have so much time to spend in the studio. So today, during these days, it's like better.
music production company organized the show. The small platform was taken off to the resort by helicopter. It took 4 hours to install the setting. A Chinese version of the Titanic has been created to keep alive memories of the ship over a century after its ill-fated maiden voyage. The full-scale replica will soon be open to the public. It's part of a theme park in Sichuan Province, southwest of China. The construction work started 6 years ago, involving over 100 workers. Around 23,000 tons of steel has been used to build the ship. That's 260 meters long. Designers hope that it will attract up to 5 million visitors a year.
The ship is located in the west part of China. It will attract tourists from the world. We estimate that the number of visitors will be between 2 million to 5 million in a year. This tourist volume should guarantee the return of our investment.
Everything in the duplication, from cabins to doorknobs, is identical to the organic Titanic, that is, original Titanic. Spending one night on the five-star ship cost around $150. The original luxury vessel sank deep in April 1912 after hitting an iceberg. Over 1,500 people died in the accident. Animals living in the Paris Zoological Park will soon be able to see visitors again after months of just interacting with zookeepers due to COVID-19 restrictions. The zoo is preparing to reopen next week with limited numbers of visitors and obligatory health protocols. During the shutdown, the park welcomed over 60 new babies, including baboons, penguins, and flamingos. Experts believe the reopening will reawaken animals' curiosity.
Seeing public again will reawaken the animals' curiosity. They also look at the visitors. Some are very interested. You'll see the seals when they're with small children. It's part of enriching their environment to see a little bit of people, of diversity. So it's good for everyone.
The park, which temporarily closed last October, houses 2,500 animals of 234 species. France is now easing its COVID-19 restrictions and plans to reopen museums, zoos, shops, and cinemas on May the 19th. Looking for a cheaper and more sustainable alternative to traditional lawn mowers? Chip may be the answer. Researchers at the University of California, Davis, have embarked on a project to test the effectiveness of sheep as new lawn mowers. The project includes 25 sheep of 4 different breeds. They are going to graze on a 1-acre plot of pasture for 3 days. The process will be repeated after a month.
The sheep have been used for a couple of things. So they're as good as goats in reducing down the vegetation. So in areas where there is, it doesn't just have to be a lawn. If they're in their areas where there's overgrown and you've got sort of those higher fuel ladders, they can eat that down. But what they also do, so they can cut that out, but then they also can come around, and after there's been a fire, they're really good at eating the weeds that come up initially, the weeds that we don't want, those invasive weeds.
Researchers believe that the initiative also has an environmental impact. With fewer mowers, there might be less emission. They also hope using sheep will help increase natural fertilization and nutrient levels.
Using an unusual array of tools for a haircut, that's what a Pakistani barber does to rise above the competition. Ali Abbas lives in the city of Lahore, eastern Pakistan. He uses blow torches, knee cleavers, and even broken glass to do a cut. He typically begins a haircut with a blowtorch to take a bit off the top. He then uses a cleaver and butcher's block and sometimes broken glass to cut the lower layers. This style is proving to be a hit.
This idea was not a joke. One day I was thinking of doing something different. It was my desire to do something in a different way. Since I started this, my customers have increased. People's confidence has been boosted. When you're visible on a platform and people see you, people will say, "We must try this. We should try this."
Abbas has been using this style since 2016. He says he has received a very good response from his clients. His peculiar approach has also resulted in TV appearances and fashion shoots.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
It's not an everyday scene for Londoners to see a whale swimming in the River Thames, but over the weekend, the city witnessed a small whale being rescued after it got stuck along the river. The baby whale was first spotted in the evening, becoming stranded on the Lock's boat rollers in Richmond. Rescuers worked during the night to free the 4-meter-long whale. After 4 hours, the injured animal was successfully moved to a safer location. A vet is now monitoring its situation to make sure it's healthy enough to be released back to the ocean.
People around the world dream of having special weddings. But these couples in Russia have made their wishes come true. 30 couples in Moscow have gotten married on cable car cabins, hoping to set a world record. The sweethearts exchanged vows mid-air with a picturesque view of rainy Moscow. If the attempt to set a record is verified and confirmed, it will go to the Guinness Book of World Records. The wedding ceremony in Russia has turned into an extraordinary one, as it was celebrated on a 720-meter-long cable car. 30 Russian couples tied the knot in the moving cable car cabins on Saturday. Even rainy weather in Moscow didn't stop them. The newlyweds said they wanted to make their already special day as unusual as possible. They also hoped that their mass wedding would set a Guinness World Record. The remains of 9 Neanderthals have been found near the Italian capital, Rome. Archaeologists believe the oldest one is dated to around 100,000 years ago. The other 8 remains are dated between 50,000 and 68,000 years ago. Researchers unearthed the fossil fragments in the Guattari prehistoric cave, or caves I should say, near Rome. Neanderthals are the closest ancient relatives of humans. They died out about 40,000 years ago. Some theories say they died because of their inability to adapt to climate change.
Thousand drones have lit up the sky of a northwestern Russian town in a dazzling show commemorating the country's victory in World War II. The drones flew in formation and displayed images related to the deadliest war in history. The show ended with a giant dove of peace flying above mesmerized spectators. Russia commemorates its victory day on May the 9th every year. There is also an annual parade which the authorities decided to postpone due to the coronavirus pandemic. Humans have used the services of honeybees for centuries. Now, Dutch scientists have found a way to get help from these small animals in detecting the coronavirus. Let's have a listen.
We take the bees from a honeybee keeper here in the region, and we use a set of bees every day, and we put those bees in harnesses to fix them, and then we present coronavirus positive and coronavirus negative samples. And after presenting a positive sample, we always present sugar water afterwards. So in the end, the bees extend their proboscis after being presented a coronavirus positive sample. and in that way we can train bees pretty quickly.
The bees indicate a positive COVID-19 result by extending their tongue to drink a reward of sugar water. Using these insects as coronavirus testing tools can significantly shorten the time spent on waiting for the result of a COVID diagnosis. It can also be very important in countries where there is not enough infrastructure and testing. Bees have an unusually strong sense of smell. They have already been used in some parts of the world to detect explosives and toxins.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. To understand the roots of the current escalation and the possible threat of all-out war, one must examine the U.S.-backed foundational Israeli regime policy of using strategies of terror and expulsion in an effort to expand its territory by killing and displacing Palestinians, says Noam Chomsky, American linguist, philosopher and political activist, in an exclusive interview for Truth Out. This interview is published under the heading, Chomsky says, without USAID, Israel wouldn't be killing Palestinians en masse. Stay tuned for more. I want to start by asking you to put into context the Israeli regime attack against Palestinians at the Al-Aqsa Mosque amid eviction protests. What's new? What's old? And to what extent is this latest round of neo-colonial Israeli violence related to Trump's move of the U.S. embassy to Al-Quds?
There are always new twists, but in essentials it is an old story, tracing back a century, taking new forms after Israeli regime's 1967 conquest and a decision 50 years ago by both major political groupings to choose expansion over security and diplomatic settlement. Anticipating and receiving crucial U.S. material and diplomatic support all the way. For what became the dominant tendency in the Zionist movement, there has been a fixed long-term goal. Put crudely, the goal is to rid the country of Palestinians and replace them with Jewish settlers, cast as the rightful owners of the land, returning home after millennia of exile. At the outset, the British, then in charge, generally regarded this project as just. Lord Balfour, author of the declaration granting Jews a national home in Palestine, captured Western elite ethical judgment fairly well by declaring that Zionism, be it right or wrong, good or bad, is rooted in age-long tradition. In present needs, in future hopes, of far profounder import than the desires and prejudices of 700,000 Arabs who now inhabit that ancient land. The sentiments are not unfamiliar. Zionist policies since have been opportunistic. When possible, the Israeli regime, and indeed the entire Zionist movement, adopt strategies of terror and expulsion. When circumstances don't allow that, it uses softer means. A century ago, the device was to quietly set up a watchtower and a fence, and soon it will turn into a settlement, facts on the ground. The counterpart today is the Israeli regime expelling even more Palestinian families from their homes where they have been living for generations, with a gesture towards legality to salve the conscience of those derided in Israel as beautiful souls. Of course, the mostly absurd legalistic pretenses for expelling Palestinians are 100% racist. There is no thought of granting Palestinian rights to return to homes from which they've been expelled, even rights to build on what's left to them. Israel's 1967 conquest made it possible to extend similar measures to the conquered territories, in this case in gross violation of international laws, as Israeli leaders were informed right away by their highest legal authorities. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime settled and annexed the Golan Heights in violation of the United Nations Security Council orders, as it did in Jerusalem. The Gaza horror story is too complex to recount here. It is one of the worst of contemporary crimes, shrouded in a dense network of deceit and apologetics for atrocities. Donald Trump went beyond his predecessors in providing free rein for Israeli crimes. One major contribution was orchestrating the Abraham Accords, which formalized long-standing tacit agreement between Israel and several Arab dictatorships that relieved limited Arab restraints on Israeli violence and expansion. The Abraham Accords fulfill another Trump objective, bringing under Washington's umbrella the major resources areas needed to accelerate the race towards environmental cataclysm, the cause to which Donald Trump and associates dedicated themselves with impressive fervor. It is of some interest that the formalization of the alliance of some of the world's most violent, repressive, and reactionary states has been greatly applauded across a broad spectrum of opinion. So far, Joe Biden has taken over these programs. He has rescinded the gratuitous brutality of Trumpism, such as withdrawing the fragile lifeline for Gaza because, as Donald Trump explained, Palestinians had not been grateful enough for his demolition of their just aspirations. Otherwise, the Trump-Kushner criminal edifice remains intact, though some specialists on the region think it might totter with repeated Israeli regime attacks on Palestinian worshippers in the Al-Aqsa Mosque and other exercises of Israel's effective monopoly of violence.
Israeli regime settlements have no legal validity, so why is the U.S. continuing to provide aid to the Israeli regime in violation of U.S. law, and why isn't the progressive community focusing on this illegality?
U.S. governments have always had a cavalier attitude to U.S. law, adhering to standard imperial practice. Take what is arguably the major example. The U.S. Constitution declares that treaties entered into by the U.S. government are the supreme law of the land. The major post-war treaty is the United Nations Charter, which bars the threat or use of force in international affairs, with exceptions that are not relevant in real cases. Can you think of a president who hasn't violated this provision of the supreme law of the land with abandon? The substantial Israeli regime nuclear arsenal should, under America's laws, raise serious questions about the legality of military and economic aid to the Israeli regime. That difficulty is overcome by not recognizing its existence, an unconcealed past and a highly consequential one.